Hey guys, and welcome back to the 10 Count. I'm joined by Milam McGinn.
Hey, what's up, guys?
And Zach Bentley.
What is up?
So first off, we got some really sad news as one of the greatest announcers of all time, Howard Finkel, passed away. I think was it Wednesday? It was Thursday.
It was Thursday.
Yeah, he just passed away. He was actually the first ever hiree from Vince McMahon Sr., I believe. So he just passed away. He was having like health complications for the past like 2 or 3 years. There were some wrestlers saying that back when they visited him back in a WrestleMania season last year that he was doing really bad. So it's actually kind of lucky that he made it this far, but he passed away. So our heart goes out to his family and all that stuff. So that was a pretty sad day. A lot of people saw him as one of the best ring announcers of all time. He was definitely one of the best for sure. He really changed the way that people saw wrestling every time they heard him, I would say, for sure.
Yeah, you know, he was around before we were really even around. I think one of my memories of him was back in Survivor Series. I can't remember the year, but it was Del Rio against CM Punk.
And Punk brought him out.
CM Punk brought him out to be his own personal announcer. So that was one of the moments where I realized, like, this is one of the greatest. And I just remember the fans going crazy for him. So our heart goes out to him and his family. It's a sad day to see all that go down and see him pass, but hopefully he's in a better place now.
Speaking of more sad stuff, we're going right into the news. There was a big day of just cuts from WWE. They cut, I believe, around 25 to 30 wrestlers and backstage guys. I have a full list right here. The wrestlers was MJ Jenkins, who was just a NXT house show guy. Deonna Purrazzo, she wrestled like a few times on Raw and NXT, but mainly NXT. Alexander Jakic, again, NXT house show guy. Rusev, that one caught me by surprise, but he's been kind of flirting with leaving for a while, not really signing his new contract, so they got rid of him. No Way Jose, Mike Kanellis, Maria Kanellis, Primo Epico. I had no idea they were still in the WWE.
Yeah, I had no idea they were still
Rowan?
There.
Rowan was an interesting one. Sarah Logan, Carl Anderson, Luke Gallows, even though they both just signed brand new contracts like a few months ago. EC3, Drake Maverick, Curt Hawkins, Heath Slater, Eric Young, and Leo Rush. All those are just that's just the wrestlers. Producers, Kurt Angle, because he was just a backstage guy ever since retiring at WrestleMania last year. Billy Kidman, Mike Rotunda, who's the father of Bo Dallas and Bray Wyatt. Pat Buck just got hired like a few months ago. Fit Finlay's been there ever since the death of WCW, so it's been a while. Sean Devari, Scott Armstrong, who was a referee for a while. Sarah Stock, Shane Helms, and Lance Storm. Coaches are Serena Deeb, Kendo Cashin and Ace Steel. Announcers, Aiden English and Jerry Soto. Referee, Mike Shioda. He's been there for 30 years. I'm surprised about that one. And other on-air talent was Josiah Williams, who did, is it Wrestling Flow?
Yeah, he did the entrance for Adam Cole.
So he got released too. And then for creative, Andre Lissenberg. So it's been quite a few. I do think a lot of these producers and maybe some of the wrestlers are going to be back once the pandemic ends. I'm not 100% sure yet, but that's what I've heard is like they got cut because they need to save money, even though they really didn't need to do this. And they're going to try to, not guarantee, but try to bring them back once it all comes in. I don't think they're going to bring back Mike and Maria Kanellis.
Some are going to be gone. I think some are kind of happy to be gone.
Yeah.
To be honest.
I think out of all of them I see, the ones I see coming back the most likely is probably Rowan. Maybe Carl Anderson, Luke Gallows, because they just signed new contracts, unless they want to go back to Japan. Who really knows? I have no idea where these guys are going to go. A lot of them have like 30 day no contract, like no wrestling clause. But I don't think the ones in NXT does. So for all we know, Deonna Purrazzo could show up on Impact this next week for their tapings, for all we know.
The only thing I want to say about that is I think a lot of people have these high hopes that they're going to go, like, all these people are going to be going, like, AEW,
I don't think so.
And that's just not realistic. I mean, you got to think, the state we're in, like, economically especially, because it's not just WWE, they're dealing with, like, economic, I don't know what's the word I'm looking for, economic disaster.
Yes,
because I mean, you got to think AEW is just doing the best they can. Like, they haven't taped anything since like last week, wasn't it, when they did all those tapings? But
they're all the way taped through, I believe, May 15th, I believe, is their date where they're all the way taped.
Yeah, so
through.
Pretty much up like close to Double or Nothing, right?
So what I could see is, I'm wondering if they tape like 30 days. I'll just see the exact time, but I wouldn't be surprised if certain smaller guys, maybe like an Eric Young.
I can see Zack Ryder. I can see Zack Ryder going there, because I know he's really close with Cody.
Yeah.
I could see, especially the Revival. We talked about that last week. I don't really know who else. I think
some of these wrestlers do go to AEW, it's just going to be on a small, like, per appearance contract. It's not going to be a multi-year or anything.
I see some of these people, like you were saying, people like Sean Spears, who aren't really there to like be top guys or anything. They're just there to be kind of like.
If Zack Ryder's there, he'll just be another Joey Janela. He'll be another he won't be anywhere pushed to the main card. Just let him be a mid carder. Let him win against some lower guys, and then let him put over some higher guys. Simple as that.
Right.
So that's a lot of guys. I think the only other news that we got was this past Friday, WWE brought in all their guys because they were going to tape the next 5 weeks of SmackDown, then the next 5 weeks of Raw, the 2 days after that, and then the next 5 weeks of NXT. And then once all the SmackDown guys got there and all the Raw guys were en route, they decided, nope, we're going to make sure we're going to have it live every single week. And I thought that's really bad.
It's an essential business. You didn't talk about
it's not only
the Florida governor sat there Wednesday?
I think it was Wednesday.
And he deemed it an essential business.
Yeah.
And so now we're getting everything live, even though it's not necessarily essential.
I mean, it's not because of that. That the main reason was Vince thought that Fox was going to potentially cut their deal if they were not doing stuff live. He was just being kind of,
paranoid.
Paranoid about it. And, I mean, one example is Daniel Bryan. Whenever he wrestled all of his stuff for SmackDown, when they filmed that and then filmed WrestleMania, he went into quarantine for 2 weeks after WrestleMania, only got to see his kids for a few days, and then went to SmackDown to start filming stuff, was not even on that SmackDown. And so he can't be with his kids because he has to go live this next week fighting, I think it's Cesaro, fighting Cesaro for a Money in the Bank match or qualifier match. So that, like, it's kind of hurting wrestlers and their families. That's I don't think it's just more about that it's an essential business. I think if they're I have no problem with them taping 5 weeks of wrestling ahead of time, but then go ahead and just make sure you're doing that and not do it every single week live.
And that's what AEW's done right.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that you're able to get that many matches for Dark and AEW main, like the main show, Dynamite.
Some of the matches aren't that great. But that
but still, I mean,
half of
their
roster
is
gone. Half their roster, like, they don't have the Young Bucks. They don't have Proud and
Powerful.
They don't have the Lucha Bros. They don't have Pac. They don't have a lot of these key guys. They don't have Joey Janela. They don't have a lot of these key mid-card and tag team guys that we're going to see the same matches over and over. And that's why you have, for example, this week on AEW, you had Sammy Guevara versus, I think it's Suge D or Sugar or...
Pineapple
Sugar.
Pete.
Oh, yes. That's what Jericho called, but I think it's like Sugar Dunkinton, I think is his name. And they had an okay match. It's fine, but at the same time, it's hard. And like, they're doing the best they can with the situation.
Right, and I mean, you got to respect them for that. You get all the way till May 15th with matches for Dynamite and Dark.
Out of like
and then
two,
on the, and then on the side,
like
you got
2.5 days of taping max. I'm like,
yeah.
It's crazy.
And then on the side, you got some of the people like from California mainly. So you have like the Bucks, SCU, Brandon Cutler, Peter Avalon, and then they brought in a couple of like jobbers from around that area, like local talent. And they're doing a whole thing over there on BTE. I think they're calling it the Jackson Compound or whatever they're calling it. It's I like what they're doing with that on BTE, and they're having a really big match next week with Matt and Nick finally squaring off.
Yeah.
In BTE 200.
This is the second time they've ever done it. They were going one on one. They did it twice in TNA like a long time ago, like in 2009. But yeah, I mean that's about it I can really think of. AEW did it well. WWE I thought was going to do it smart like they did with WrestleMania. They filmed everything ahead of time, but now it looks like they're not. Double or Nothing is supposed to be coming live, I think. I don't know if it's going to be taped or live. I don't know how they're going to build up
these
matches.
I think as of now,
they
said it's going to be live.
Well, I don't know how they're going to build up some of these matches and where they're going to do it at. So are they just going to have a pay-per-view card or what's like the main event? Like MJF is not going to be able to wrestle. A lot of these, like the Young Bucks, won't be able to wrestle unless they can somehow be able to get them out of there and start building up. I don't know if they can or not. Let's see.
Yeah, because that's May 23rd, right?
May 23rd, absolutely. Absolutely.
Man.
We'll just get right into this recap. We're going to start with Raw that just happened this past Monday night. It kicked off with Drew McIntyre after it played clips of his WrestleMania victory over Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, as well as the Big Show. He was thanking the fans, saying how I'm not going to be a champion who's not going to be here. I'm going to be a champion. If someone asks for a title, I'm gonna defend it. Then out comes Zelina Vega with Andrade. Pretty much them saying how Andrade beat him in NXT and then put Drew McIntyre on the shelf for 6 weeks because he, like, I think I tore one of his bones in his arm. I forgot which one it was. And so they have a champion versus champion match. I thought it was going to be for the title, but it wasn't for the title later that night. Then we have Asuka versus Ruby Riott. This is one of the three women's contender matches for the Money in the Bank. They have a back and forth. Asuka does well in non-arena matches because she's very, she can really vocalize. So it makes it sound like it's not empty. It's not quiet or anything like that. She vocalizes, so it's kind of weird sounds at times, but at least it's not completely quiet. Her and Ruby Riott go back and forth, but then Asuka ends up getting her into the Asuka lock and making her tap out. Good match. So far, a good start to Raw. Then we go over to another good match, Aleister Black versus Oney Lorcan. Oney Lorcan got a lot more offense in, but not as much offense as Apollo Crews did last week, which was kind of weird, I thought. I really thought Apollo Crews versus Aleister went way too long. Aleister Black versus Oney Lorcan was a perfect, hard-hitting, striking battle, back and forth. I mean, it looked pretty stiff. I think Aleister was, like, bleeding at one point, if I'm not wrong. But after back and forth, Aleister was able to hit the Black Mass onto Oney Lorcan and get the win. Good, really good start to Raw. The first hour was very good. Then we had Shayna Baszler versus Sarah Logan, and this was weird. So it was, she immediately tackled Logan to the mat and beat Mercer until she just kept beating down on Sarah Logan until the referee stepped in. So she stomped on the rival's arm, and it leads to the referee to call for the bell. And Sarah Logan loses, I think. So I think it was how it was a no contest, but she forced her opponent to not be able to compete. It was a very weird thing. Like, her arm was in a weird angle, and she just stepped on it. Referee comes in, calls for the bell, and Baszler's the winner.
I think wasn't Sarah Logan just cut too?
Yeah, yeah. She was just cut.
That's just weird to me, man. She was one of the biggest. She was one of the bigger stars on Raw. Like, I don't want to say stars.
Okay,
but
she was.
She was one of, like, the women they were using on Raw. And
to be fair, she was a chick that every time she was, like, faced off against Becky Lynch, she's like, oh, well, she's not going to win. That's how she was. She was, like, a wrestler that people knew, but they knew she was not going to win, just like Natalya for the longest time back in the day.
I only knew Sarah Logan from Riot Squad, and when they broke up, I was like, okay, well, I don't really know
who
you are.
What is she
going
to do now? Not much. Not much. So, Shayna Baszler is the second competitor in the Money in the Bank women's ladder match. Then we go to Austin Theory, who's now official call-up for Raw. Over the past, 2 months, Austin Theory, I've seen as a guy who's going to be the next, or one of the next NXT champions once he gets a little bit more practicing. Now he's on Raw. And he's actually improving. Him and Akira Tozawa had a match. It was back and forth. Jerry Lawler had a very questionable call during this. Akira Tozawa, I believe, does a moonsault on the outside, and Jerry Lawler called it a ramen noodle moonsault. And a lot of people did not like that, but that's the king. That's Jerry Lawler. That's what he does.
That's Jerry Lawler.
Yeah.
This is not new.
Yeah, it really wasn't. Really wasn't new. Austin Theory hits the ATL for the win. And then Andrade and Angel Garza joins them in the ring, and the trio beat up Tozawa. So, looks like he's still part of that Zelina Vega stable, which I have no problem with. No problem with. Then we have Tahiti Miles versus Angel Garza. And Angel Garza won in a pretty short squash match. And then out comes Austin Theory and Andrade and beat down him. So, looks like they're a stable, like I just said.
Hold on a second.
Why? So after that match, we switch over to Kairi Sane versus Nia Jax in the third Money in the Bank qualifier match. And Sane really got dominated for the most of the match. I think if Nia Jax would have faced someone else that's not Kairi Sane, we would have had a... I would not have been as mad, but I would think she should still be in the Money in the Bank and have, Asuka facing off against Kairi Sane. And then you have potentially a rivalry build up there, maybe for SummerSlam, but doesn't look like they're going to do that. Nia Jax won with, I believe it was the Samoan drop into the leg drop. She just got destroyed. It was sad to see for a star by Kairi Sane. Then we had Bobby Lashley versus another guy who got released, Noah Jose. This was just a squash match, but it looks like there's a crack in the marriage between Lana and Bobby Lashley. Lana was trying to call shots, but Bobby Lashley told her to shut up. And he still won. So, but I guess
good job, Bob.
Yeah, good old Bob. Then we had the Viking Raiders versus Ricochet and Cedric Alexander. They had a good match. I mean, it seems to be that I want to say it was the Viking Raiders versus Ricochet and Alistair had a really good NXT TakeOver match. I think it was the Royal Rumble. No, it was the WrestleMania TakeOver last year. And they had nowhere compared to this, but it was still a really good match. The Viking Raiders won, and looks like they're going to be facing the Street Profits at Money in the Bank. I've heard rumors about.
Yeah, that's the rumor. That's the rumor.
But it was good. The High Flyers did the best they could, but the Viking Raiders were too much for them. Then it was Andrade versus Drew McIntyre in a champion versus champion match. This was not for the title. Angel Garza and Austin Theory were at ringside to provide backup for Andrade. McIntyre ended up winning. It was only a good 8-9 minutes with a Claymore. I think Austin Theory and Zelina Vega and Garza all tried to get involved, but McIntyre was able to take them all out and able to get a clean win over Andrade. Then Garza came out, or Garza was able to get back up and then take down the champion with a chop block, and then Seth Rollins came down to deliver a super kick and then I believe two stomps. So it looks like Seth Rollins versus McIntyre is the next WWE Championship feud.
Yep.
Could see that one coming.
Yeah. I'm not surprised. I thought that Rollins was actually going to win at Mania to lead up to that, but guess not.
Then what are we going to get for Kevin Owens?
Who knows?
Maybe unless he's going to insert himself into it too.
Have a triple threat. Maybe. But then again, do we really want to see Kevin Owens versus Seth Rollins feud some more?
No, but I think just for the general idea of McIntyre, Rollins, and Owens being in a triple threat match would be pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It's very true. Switch over to NXT this past Wednesday. It kicks off with Finn Balor versus one of the four, Imperium, Fabian Aichner. And it's a very stiff match. Finn Balor was not taking it easy. He really took it to Fabian really quickly. And after a good 8 or 9 minutes, he was able to win with the coup de grace and then into the 1916. I believe Marcel Bartel was at ringside, but he was not able to help his fellow Imperium member win. So Finn Balor won, and that's going to give him a big push to next week's match with another superstar that we'll get to here in a minute. Charlotte Flair is out for a she had a pre-tape promo about how she dominated three generations. She defeated Trish Stratus, Natalya, Nikki Bella, Sasha Banks, Becky Lynch, Bayley, and now Rhea Ripley. So looks like now she's set on Io Shirai, Candice LeRae, and Mia Yim, the future of NXT, that she wants to beat them now. Good promo from Charlotte. She's much better as a heel than she is a face, so it's nice to see. Then we had Xia Li versus Aaliyah. That was a match.
Yep.
It was a match. Xia Li defeated Aaliyah by pinfall with a spinning heel kick. Not much I can really say about that. If we're not talking about Io Shirai, Candice LeRae, Bianca Belair's on Raw now, but if we're not talking about the higher-up women of NXT, the lower-down women of NXT, it's not great. It's really not great. Then we have a Cruiserweight Tournament match that had Isaiah Swerve Scott versus Akira Tozawa. One of the group has Isaiah Scott, Akira Tozawa. I think it's got Drake Maverick and... I'm trying to think who else is in that. I know... El Fantasma is one of them. Gentleman Jack Gallagher. There's like a good eight that are in it. And it's kind of like how the G1 is you face all three of your group. The one who has the best record then faces the winner of the other group. And the winner of that is the Cruiserweight Champion. That's what it seems like. But Akira Tozawa and Isaiah Swerve Scott had a really back and forth match. Akira Tozawa surprisingly got the clean win over Isaiah Swerve Scott. So, I'm guessing Scott's probably going to win the next two and maybe be one of the finalists because I think he should be one of the ones that is going to get pushed, but we'll see. As Akira Tozawa was already a former Cruiserweight champion. Then we had Tegan Nox versus Raquel Gonzalez. Raquel Gonzalez is Dakota Kai's kind of lackey, her bodyguard. And Tegan Nox, this is weird. Tegan Nox was getting dominated for most of the match. And then Shotzi Blackheart laid out Dakota Kai, and the distraction allowed Nox to roll up Gonzalez for the three count after Dakota Kai tried to get involved. So it looks like we're probably going to get Tegan Nox and Shotzi Blackheart versus Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez. Is this feud ever going to end? We started this at War Games last year. My gosh. We're probably going to have like a end off like at SummerSlam this next year, almost a whole year feud. Something for them to do.
Yeah, I thought it was gonna be over sooner, but yeah. I guess not.
In a pre tape interview, Keith Lee explained why he had to steal his own car to head to a wrestling show. It was just him pretty much saying some backstory of his, so it's not really much. It wasn't him building to another challenger, it's just him talking about his family and how smooth operator. Yes, very much so. And how he's one of the biggest stars in NXT now. Then we had Dexter Lumis.
Yes, you are.
Oh, yeah. He definitely is. I mean, besides Undisputed Era, Pete Dunne and Matt Riddle, he's probably up there too. One of the biggest. Then we had Dexter Lumis versus Tahiti Miles, who just fought on Raw. Dexter Lumis, he's like a serial killer kind of guy. Very weird Stranger Things type theme song. It's weird. And, of course, he won with a different variation of an Anaconda Vice. It was a match. So, Velveteen Dream and Adam Cole were supposed to have, like, a face-off, but Adam Cole no-shows, and then Finn Balor interrupts him. So, looks like next week, Finn Balor versus Velveteen are going to have a one-on-one match, and the winner will face Adam Cole. That's what it seems like to me. So, yeah, it will be a likely number one contendership match. Okay. So, more than likely, if Dream's going to win. I thought he was already the number one contender. I guess not. Now he's got to beat Finn Balor, who's trying to beat Walter. I really don't understand NXT. Really don't understand NXT at times. I'll just say that.
I don't either.
Then we have the main event match, which has Matt Riddle and a mystery partner of Pete Dunne's choosing versus Undisputed Era for, it is for the tag team championships. And it is Timothy Thatcher who's making his WWE and NXT debut. He was actually partners with Walter back in, I'm thinking, Evolve and maybe PWG. So he was a hot free agent that WWE was able to sign. I thought he was only going to be for NXT UK, but I guess he was in the States. So now he's going to be, might be a one-time thing on NXT. This was a good match. Nowhere compared to what I thought it could have been. But it was a good match. And Timothy Thatcher, he does not wrestle like a WWE star. He wrestles like a indie star. Like, he goes stiff shots, takedowns. He looks like a MMA fighter out there. So him and Matt Riddle would be a really cool tag team if Pete Dunne has to wait like another few months, for all we know. But it was really good. Thatcher actually made Strong tap out with a armbar. So they're retained as a champion. I think there's a backstage interview afterwards that said, I'm not the tag team champion. I'm still Pete Dunne. I respect Pete Dunne. I just wanted to help him win this match for you. And it's like, okay. So he's not the tag team champion. It's still Pete Dunne. He just helped Matt Riddle retain him, pretty much. Then after that, Tommaso Ciampa's backstage saying he's done with Johnny Gargano. This is the last of the rivalry. And then from out of nowhere, Killer Cross, a.k.a. Karrion Kross, or Karrion Kross, I think it's Karrion Kross, attacked Ciampa and laid him out. And then we see some boots of a lady, which is probably his real-life wife, Scarlett Bordeaux. And it looks like that's the next major feud. So I guess they're really pushing him to be one of the next big stars of NXT now that Gargano and Ciampa is not going to happen anymore. So I'm okay with that. I like to see them, you know, build up new guys. So that's good. Switch over on the same night, AEW kicks off with the first of the right side bracket, TNT Championship Tournament quarterfinals between Colt Cabana and Lance Archer. I think we all agree going into this, there's no way Lance Archer loses.
No, not at all.
No.
He's been pushed. I think him and Cody are definitely going to have the match for it at Double Nothing. I don't know who's going to win that one, but my money's probably on Lance Archer. I think they're really pushing him. They really like him.
Yeah, because right now you only have in the other bracket, you got Darby and Sammy, which I think is taking place this upcoming week, right?
That one and Kip Sabian and Dustin.
Yeah, yeah, but like, let's be real. I don't think Kip Sabian or Dustin are beating Lance Archer. Definitely Lance Archer's definitely going to be in the finals.
Definitely not.
It only makes sense that Cody gets that spot against Lance Archer because their whole storyline is like, yeah, we want to beat Cody. That was their whole storyline since him and Jake the Snake first came.
So I definitely do think if it is going to be Cody and Lance Archer in the finals, having Cody beat Lance Archer, I mean, it's kind of a lose-lose when you think about it because Cody's lost quite a few big matches at pay-per-views.
Yeah, MJF,
I want to say Jericho. He's only, yeah, I mean.
The only one he won was, he beat Spears.
He beat Spears.
And
he drawed against Dustin. Darby. He drawed against Darby, beat Dustin, lost to the Young Bucks at Fight for the Fallen, then lost to Jericho, and then lost to MJF. Yeah. So it would be kind of crappy, but then again, he's so much bigger than his losses. It's like a loss does not really hurt them as much as it would hurt, I think, Lance Archer, personally. We'll definitely have to see, though. But he kicks off, and him and Colt Cabana actually have a lot more closely contested match than I thought they would have. It was more back and forth than I thought. a lot of times Colt Cabana was trying to like slap him and hit him and stuff. But then Lance Yard was just no-selling it because, I mean, he's a bigger guy. But Colt Cabana just trying to do the best he could, but he was not able to overcome Lance Archer. Lance Archer, I mean, he's a strong dude. He was able to get a crazy choke slam onto Colt Cabana, and then his finisher, was it the blackout? Is that what he calls it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and which like puts him over his head for like a razor's edge and then flips him over for a power slam. Somehow he got that on Colt Cabana and was able to get the win. So good match to start off AEW. Definitely the right person won.
Lance Archer is slowly like moving up my list. I'm really liking him.
He's definitely doing really well.
They're doing him well for a monster heel.
Definitely.
Definitely. And I like, and especially when you got Jake the Snake Roberts as your mouthpiece, like you're.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, you set up for success.
Mm-hmm. During this entire show, there was multiple MMA and actors and comedians that showed up, and they're giving their picks for who's going to win the main event, Jake Hager versus Jon Moxley. I want to say the first one was Ariel Helwani, who does MMA and mostly UFC for ESPN and stuff. I believe he picked Jon Moxley. No, he must pick Jake Hager. I'm not exactly sure which one.
Yeah, a lot of the Bellator and MMA guys were picking Jake Hager.
And then a lot of the main wrestlers were picking Jon Moxley. I want to say Big Mike McCarthy, who did a UFC, who's been a UFC ref for the longest time and now a Bellator ref. Mike Goldberg did. I mean, there was a lot of guys. And so, like I said, all the MMA guys and then the Inner Circle, they all chose Jake Hager, while all the main wrestlers chose Jon Moxley. And then we switch over. So then right after that, it's Britt Baker versus, well, enhancement talent, Cassandra Golden. And, mm-hmm. I mean, it was a match. Doesn't look like, I think this match was filmed before her broken nose. I'm not exactly sure because the commentary was still saying that, or her, the deviated septum, that's what it's called. So I don't know, the commentary definitely seemed like it was after, so I'm not exactly sure, but she ended up winning with that stomp on the bottom rope that like run to the person's mouth. Pretty much, Chris Jericho was on a commentary again, and he re-puts it over a lot because Chris Jericho, whenever he does eventually retire from in-ring wrestling, he can absolutely be a commentator because he knows the ins and out of being inside the ring, so he knows what to do. He's a heel commentator, but it's not one of those annoying heels. He's just saying what he would do, not what they should do. He's pretty much saying, why aren't you beating her? Her face is right there. Just come on, punch her. And it's like, what is she doing? Chris Jericho is definitely one of the best commentators, like guest commentators that we've had. He's so much better than Cody. I think there's nothing wrong with Cody, but Chris Jericho is just one of the best out there right now. And definitely during this, he really liked the way Britt Baker looked. He liked her jacket and all that stuff. So it was a match. A lot of trash talking between her and Sheeta at the beginning. So I guess they're continuing that feud because no Nyla Rose. They kind of need women. And Britt Baker is the only real standout woman they've got right now. Then I think we had, was this here where we had the bubbly bunch?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So we had, I think it was, I'm trying to remember all what was talked about in the bubbly bunch. It was them like talking trash about Matt Jackson, Matt Hardy, Nick Jackson, how Jake Hager.
Pretty much trashing the Elite.
Yeah. And then one of the best moments was Jake Hager was at the poolside with his kids. And then he said, all right, hide your ears, kids. And then they hide their ears and said, I'm going to beat the shit out of Jon Moxley tonight. And then he's looking around, and then they just pan over to the kids and they're all like, I'm not hearing this. So I thought it was a really funny, obviously anything with a Chris Jericho backstage segment is going to be money. Obviously. Then it was Sammy Guevara versus Pineapple Pete, I think. I don't know exactly what his name is, if it's Pineapple Pete, Sugar Dunkerton. Yeah. And it was a match back and forth, but more of the action was dominated by Sammy Guevara. His finish is kind of like a go to sleep, but it's like a Dominic Dijakovic's feast your eyes, go to sleep, where it's flipped him, knee, 1, 2, 3. So, yeah. Sammy Guevara is now going to beat the shit out of Darby Allin, he says, in the TNT tournament next week. There you go. And then he was able to, and then he put a few stomps into Suge D before Darby Allin made the save. Just fine. Chuck Taylor versus Kip Sabian. This went a bit long. I like the stuff they did before people interfered. It was very back and forth. Chuck Taylor is a very good wrestler. Kip Sabian is an up-and-comer who I think should be a star within the next 2 or 3 years, potentially. We'll have to see. Finish comes when Penelope Ford was getting involved, and then Orange Cassidy got involved. Jimmy Havoc attacked Orange Cassidy, which distracted Chuck Taylor, and Kip Sabian got the roll-up. I would have liked a more decisive win for Kip Sabian, considering he's going to be facing Dustin Rhodes next week. So, and then I think next week they announced, was it Jimmy Havoc versus Orange Cassidy?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure that's a match.
I think that's what it is.
Okay. So,
I know
should
he's
be interesting.
In action, but
yeah.
I can't remember.
I think it is. Yeah, I think it is. Yeah. And then we had Justin Law versus Sean Spears. And out of all the squash matches, I actually like this one the most. Because Sean Spears, I mean, he was dominating Justin Law for most of it. And then he got on all fours, pretty much saying, like, how if you're strong enough, you should be able to take me down and roll me up. And he actually rolled up Sean Spears for a very close two count. And then he said, all right, that's it. I'm done. Then he starts beating him down, hits him with the C4. Hate that name. It's a Death Valley driver. I don't know why he calls it a C4.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, is it different from the F5 kind of? No, I don't think so. I have no idea. But it's a Death Valley driver. He gets the win. It was a fine match. Then this went around 40 minutes. It's the main event. The undefeated Jake Hager versus the undefeated John Moxley in singles action. Empty arena. This was filmed around 3 weeks ago at Daly's Place. Just Jim Ross JR on commentary. Multiple times I heard Jim Ross hyping up saying this is a really good match. John Moxley I had an interview the very day before and said this was a really great match. I'm hurting after this. I'm like, okay, I'm really excited for this match. And it started off well. They started off doing just 5 minutes of just holds. Just 5 minutes of just wrestling on the mat. And it was different. I was like, okay, this is good.
Yeah, they're trying to give it the MMA feel.
Exactly.
They were building it to be kind of like an MMA match.
Because Jake Hager's an MMA fighter, and
Moxley's training.
Moxley has trained since 2008 in jiu-jitsu, and I think it's jiu-jitsu. So they're both well-trained in MMA. One. Not as much as Jon Moxley, but still. And I was expecting, you know, this could be a really good fight. And then it's just a basic empty arena match. They go elsewhere. JR messed up on commentary saying how it's not a false count anywhere. But then Moxley was able to put the figure four around one of those stairs. And the referee was like, do you submit? Do you quit? So I guess it was a false count. Anywhere, it was just a back and forth on the outside, nothing really much. I think if you cut 10 minutes out of that, it would have been very good, but they didn't. Once they got back in the ring, then Hager pretty much took control. Moxley was able to hit a paradigm shift, but wasn't able to get the win. Jake Hager brings in a chair, then John Moxley was able to get the chair, throws it at Hager. Then hits his paradigm shift onto the chair. 1, 2, 3 wins. End of the show. I mean, I think if you cut 10 minutes of that, it would have been a lot better. But it felt very long. So much better than Edge and Orton. So much better than Edge and Orton because they did different stuff. But still, I feel like it went 10 minutes too long and one commercial break too long.
I agree.
I feel like there wasn't a whole lot of spots in this match. They just kind of went.
Yeah, that's what I felt like.
It was more of a wild brawl, but if it was a wild brawl, I was hoping, like, I don't know. I mean, it's an empty arena. Why do I hear my voice? Bentley?
What?
I could hear my voice there coming from your mic. It's fine. I'll just cut it.
Can we keep going?
Yeah. We're almost done. But I would say is like, you know, just have Moxie jump from somewhere high. He can do that. Have Hager put him through a table. Yeah, put him through a table or something. I mean, you have this whole empty arena and they only went around the ringside pretty much. So
that and, I was hoping Jim for a little more. Was on commentary.
By himself. Yeah, by himself was a little concerning because, I mean, there were just oftentimes, I think whenever Jim Ross talked, it was fine. But whenever Jim Ross couldn't really talk and he had to think about something, it was just awkward silence because Jake That's Hager and John Moxley didn't really say much.
I like Excalibur and Jim Ross being together because you get the expertise with Jim Ross and he can create, like, he kind of gets that, like, feel, like, oh, this feels important. But you have Excalibur there to give, like, the, what's the word I'm looking for?
The moves and stuff.
Well, yeah, the moves, and he knows, like, all the stuff because he's, like, familiarized with, like, all this indie wrestling stuff and he's familiarized with all the characters that all the wrestlers are trying to portray.
He can say people's names, right?
Yeah. But, yeah, I feel like you have him there more as, like, a exposition. That's the word I was looking for. He's more like an exposition guy. Yeah. When JR just kind of gives the match, like, that kind of wow factor.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Ross puts you in the moment with the match.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could have been a lot better, but it was a match.
I think it would have been better if it wasn't so hyped up.
Yeah, like, it was very much hyped
way
up.
Way too hyped up, and we were thinking this was going to be a classic. But
and then part of it I think we knew is we knew Moxley wasn't dropping the title.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he just got it like a month ago, a month and a half ago.
Yeah, it was like 49 days is what it was, but yeah.
And the way they built him up, there's no way he was going to lose that easily to...
Nope.
I mean, Jake Hagar, they built him up very well. I will say that. They built him up very well. There's just no way he was going to beat Moxley because he's kind of like the muscle of the Inner Circle.
Yeah, I mean, it would be like Wardlow winning the title before MJF did. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It wouldn't make sense.
I don't know. My thing with the match was, is one of the aspects I kind of like with the Edge and Orton match was just how they did go all around the performance center and you got to see them do like creative spots. With this, I just felt like they did a couple of things out, like in the where the chairs were and where the seats were. I think you could have done some cool stuff because we've been in that arena before, and we know there's like behind the steps and everything. There's like all kinds of like concessions and stuff back there, and there's plenty of open space.
Yeah,
where you can just be pounding if, each other.
Yeah, I mean, just toss them in the like dipping dots again.
Mm-hmm. And then it's built like an amphitheater, so I mean. They could be fighting up in, like,
I will say, with this match, though, is they still did 10 times more stuff than Edge and Orton.
Oh,
because
for sure.
Even with Edge and Orton just walking away, like, just walking around, all they did was just throw someone into it. They do, like, a small move, 1, 2, 3, up, go up to 9, and then the other person gets up. High move, 1, 2, 3, up to 9, other person gets up. That's how the match was for 40 minutes. At least with this, there was commercial breaks to take a break from just the little bit of action there was. But at least they did more stuff. And we finish off the week with SmackDown. Live last night. We kick it off with Braun Strowman and Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross in a moment of bliss. They're saying how proud they are that Braun won the championship. They're happy because they're the tag team champions. Him saying how he doesn't owe Bray Wyatt anything, how he's trying to get away from his past of being in the Wyatt family. And because the match is official, it's going to be Bray Wyatt versus Braun Strowman. It's not going to be Braun Strowman versus The Fiend. It's going to be Braun Strowman versus Bray Wyatt, just the normal sweater wearing Bray Wyatt. So he's saying,
so is this going to be a way that to get Bray Wyatt to, I guess, lose again? Do you see Braun Strowman winning?
Yes, I do. Because I don't see them taking the title off. I don't know. If they're saving for Roman, I mean, there's rumors that Roman won't be back for another couple months. So we'll just have to see.
Yeah. I mean, if it would have been The Fiend versus Braun Strowman, all my money would be on The Fiend.
Yeah.
But I think this is an easy route to get Braun Strowman the win without making The Fiend look weak. So.
Exactly. And I could see, I don't think it's going to happen per se, but I could see someone getting hurt in the men's Money in the Bank ladder match before it, and it just becomes another, what would it be, 7 men. And the Braun Strowman, well, it would be interesting to see if they're like, someone got hurt, and then it's 7 men, and then whenever someone's about to win, lights go out, the Fiend is your new Money in the Bank holder. And then he cashes in on Braun later. I don't know how it would work, but it would be interesting.
That would be interesting.
But to end the segment, there is a gift on the corner of the ring, and Braun thought that Alexa and Nikki got it for him. It was actually Bray. He opens it up. His hands start shaking because it's the Black Sheep mask. And then we get the Bray Wyatt laugh track. The over and over and over. So, psychologically kind of stuff. Then it's Sasha Banks versus Tamina, because last week Bayley said that Tamina will get her number one contender opportunity if she beats Sasha Banks. And she beat Sasha Banks. Wasn't clean or anything. Thanks to help from Lacey Evans, because Bayley was about to get involved. But she finished off with a super kick inside the ring and won. So Tamina versus Bayley, I guess, is going to be at probably Money in the Bank. Weird.
She has a terrible super kick. I hate it.
Yeah, it's not very good. It just kind of, it's kind of like she just puts it out there and everyone else just runs into it.
Yeah, that, and depending on the camera angle, it looks like she gets it about stomach high and then just slaps her leg.
That's true. Then after that, we had Sheamus versus Denzel DeJounte. It's the same dude that Seth Rollins beat like 2 weeks ago when he finished off with a bro kick. Then Michael Cole was trying to transition to a promo video about Jeff Hardy, but Sheamus walked over and said, "Why aren't you celebrating my win?" And he was just staring at him for a while. Then we get a promo video about Jeff Hardy and his battle with drugs and alcohol. And they've been doing this for the past 2 weeks, and they're going to continue doing this. So it's kind of like his redemption story and how it's going to be his big return, even though he made his return to beat Corbin like a month ago. It's weird. Then we had the first of two, Money in the Bank qualifiers for SmackDown tonight. It was Naomi versus Dana Brooke. I thought going into this, Naomi was going to win, but Dana Brooke actually kicked out of the rear view and then was able to roll up Naomi for the win. Dana Brooke won. Okay, TV match, but it was a TV match. So Dana Brooke, I guess, is getting a small push. Not a big one, just a small one. Then Sonya Deville comes out to make amends with Mandy Rose. Mandy Rose comes out. She was saying, "You're my best friend. You were at my sister's wedding with me," yada, yada, yada. And then she's about to start crying, and it says, "You are the most selfish person I've ever met." And them saying how Fire Desire was never about Sonya. It was always about Mandy, which is true. It's very true. That because they always came out. I mean, they always came out to Mandy Rose's music. That's the whole reason Sonya set up Dolph Ziggler. It was because she was tired of getting into Per Shadow. I'm not exactly sure.
That honestly, my own opinion, they really she kind of did it for no reason. There's no real explanation behind it.
Yeah, but it's SmackDown booking. Then we had a good TV match. Would have been a lot better if it was in front of fans. I've said it a million times, but it's true. Daniel Bryan versus Cesaro for the Miami Bay qualifier. Obviously, Daniel Bryan was going to win, and he was able to win via a submission. Shinsuke was trying to get involved, but Drew Gulak, who was in Daniel Bryan's corner, was able to stop Shinsuke from getting involved. So Daniel Bryan won with the Yes Lock and moves on to the Money in the Bank qualifier. After that, King Corbin makes a statement by injuring Elias backstage. And because he injured Elias backstage through, I guess, an entire commercial break, he gets an opportunity to get into Money in the Bank qualifier next week. He's facing Drew Gulak. And I believe it's a women's one. Sasha Banks versus... Is it Lacey? Oh, gosh. Sasha Banks is facing someone. I'll come back to that. But I guess this entire Elias Corbin feud is not done yet. Sadly.
Yay.
I'm so sick of it. I'm really sick of it. I feel like we've, like, it hasn't been that long, but it has been long enough that I really don't want to see it anymore.
It was long enough to be wrapped up at WrestleMania, but we're still going.
Yeah. That's true. That is true. The main event was the New Day versus... Oh, no, sorry, it's not the New Day. It's Big E representing the New Day. Jimmy Uso, or is it Jey Uso? I'm going to go for Jey. I think this one was Jey. Oh, so it was Sasha Banks versus Lacey Evans next week. Okay, good. Let me see. Let me look. I think it was Jey. Yeah, okay.
I'm going to vote for Jimmy.
It was Jey. Oh, dang it. Versus The Miz. He's the SmackDown Tag Team Champion. They went through, I think, an entire commercial break. And from out of legit nowhere, it was just seemed like the match was picking up. The Miz had Jey Uso inside of a figure four leg lock, trademarked by Ric Flair, who I guess taught him, that he said many times. And then, for some reason, Big E just picks up The Miz. Jey decides, you know, I'm just going to roll out of the ring. Then, so Big E was able to hit The Miz with a big ending, 1-2-3 wins. Definitely seems like they were pushed for time. Even though for 3 minutes you had Kofi on video call saying, I'm so hyped, we're 8-time champions. Xavier Woods is on video saying, I'm so hyped, we're 8-time champions. And that's how SmackDown ended. Kind of weird. Okay, SmackDown. Money in the Bank will be in a... It's going to be on top of the corporate roof at the headquarters in, I think it's... Is it Connecticut?
Yeah.
Okay, in Connecticut. So, kind of...
Is it in a Triple H's hometown? What's it called? Or where he's from?
Yeah, I think so.
What? I can't remember what the town's called. Like British, something like that.
Yeah, I think it's one of those. I'm not exactly sure.
It's been done before. I mean, they hosted a Raw, or the beginning of a Raw, on top of the headquarters. I mean, it's been done. But I don't know of how this is going to be with the Money in the Bank match. Do they have enough room on that roof to do all that?
We'll see. I'm not sure what the where the briefcase is, like how it's going to be held up in the air. Probably a crane or something.
Is there going to be a spot where somebody like fake falls off and fake dies and then they'll return like 3 months later?
I don't know. If Jeff Hardy's in that thing, anything could happen.
Jeff Hardy's gonna swanton bomb off the building.
I'm worried about that. That's all in WWE news and UFC news. Tomorrow night was supposed to be the, or it's actually tonight, was supposed to be the UFC event 249 that had Tony Ferguson versus Khabib Nurmagomedov. I think I said that right. Close enough. But obviously, since Khabib was in his home, well, no, he was not in his home. He was in Russia. He could not be able to get to the fight, so they postponed it. So they got Justin Gaethje in his place, but then obviously that got canceled. And now I believe it's postponed to May 9th. And somehow, I don't know how this is possible, but Tony Ferguson cut 24 pounds in 4 days. 24 pounds in 4 days to get to the 155 weight limit. I'm like, that he must have been going through that weight cut. I don't know how he did that. Probably steroids. Probably some type of drug.
Well, I mean, he'd better hope not, but...
And this... Apparently, this card is supposed to be getting a lot better, Dana White said. I think they're going to be holding it somehow in Las Vegas in front of no fans. We'll just have to see. No idea how this is all going to go down.